Hello and welcome back to the Palace Way podcast. You can hear it in my voice. We finally have something positive to talk about as Crystal Palace win their first game of the season. Of course, had never gone 9 without a win. We equaled our tally in the 1992-93 season, where of course we were relegated. But with a victory over Tottenham Hotspur, we are so fucking back. Oliver Glass is the best manager in the Premier League. We're going into Europe and Brighton are shit. Today, for this glorious episode, I am joined by the fake fan who only comes back when we win, Alex Jones. How are you doing?
I am very good, Bruno. You took the words right out of my mouth. What a shameless glory hunter I am. Yep, back for Palace's first win, having just gone on ghost mode. Speaking of ghost mode, absolutely no one on that team the other day went on ghost mode. It was such a complete performance for Palace. And yeah, buzzing to be back, buzzing to unpack it with you guys today.
And of course, I am also joined by our sort of former editor turned star boy in the world of journalism, Bobby Manzi. Bobby, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm not sure about star, but I'll take all the compliments I can get.
Well, you're basically sort of the Palace Way's Michael Olise at this point, except we can't seem to... Well, I was about to say we can't seem to let you go, but it seems to that's been the theme of the season so far up until now. I mean, I'll start off with you, Alex, just straight away. What were your thoughts on the way we started the game and the way we sort of handled it from start to finish tactically?
I mean, we forced a needless corner from Spurs within 2 minutes. I think that tells you everything about the intensity with which we were playing. Particularly when you look at the Forest game, I think the first thing that struck me instantly before we even look at any data and statistics was we genuinely felt like we were a quarter of the pitch higher. I mean, front to back, it was such a complete pressing performance from every player. And I was particularly impressed for how that sustained across the entire 90 minutes and beyond. That was my real first takeaway. Then secondly, I think it was a more subtle shift, really. Particularly looking at that back line, I think it went under the radar probably right at the start, but I think fans quickly worked out that we'd shifted the order of the centre-backs. And what that, I think, did ultimately was enable us to get the best out of that back three. So Gehi taking his natural left spot, of course, and then Lacroix had set down the middle with Chalobah on the right, with Chalobah more accustomed to that side of Chelsea. I think what was particularly interesting, we'll get into Lacroix in more detail, but I think the way in which they could then open up, particularly Gay and Chalobah, to advance forward, and then Lacroix with more emphasis to kind of run into the pitch and then run back to make those last-ditch tackles as well, I think, was we ultimately saw three centre-backs getting the best out of each other and getting the best out of their own performances. And I think when you combine that depth with the sort of freedom we were playing from at the back, I think we had a very, very robust team performance. And I mean, you can hear the excitement in my voice. I still can't really get my head around how we managed to keep Spurs to what I think was their lowest XG since December 23, when they played Man City or something like that. I didn't read it before, but you know, you get the point. It's just, where to begin? I mean, I don't want to get too carried away, but it was a really complete performance.
Yeah, I agree. It was a complete performance. Now, the differences that I picked out on was something I've been advocating for weeks, which is a start of Ismail Assar on the right. I think it was crucial to the way Palace attack. Everyone's been saying that they need more pace on the side. They need someone who can carry the ball more. And he certainly did that. And what you noticed from it was that Palace were progressing into the box more, which is what they haven't been doing this season. Palace's shots inside the box increased. They had 7 shots inside the box. The goal came from inside the box. The play was just so much more progressive from start to finish, and it's exactly what Palace have been missing. And the dividends paid. Palace have got a strong coherence. They've got strong centre-halves, so they've got a basis to work from. And then once the attack become more fluid, as it did against Tottenham, you just noticed a very cohesive team performance.
Yeah, it was kind of the first time since Aston Villa last season where we've looked good, because it's been a pretty tough season to watch so far. But something I also want to point out is it's probably the first time in a while as well that we've looked good across a whole 90 minutes. I mean, we were straight at them from the start of the game. Pressing was exceptional. Jean-Philippe Mateta looked back to his usual self. I say usual self, back to his old self from last season. We put out a tweet on the Palace Way about 10, 15 minutes in saying, God, he looks ready to go again. And he scores sort of 10 minutes later. So that was somewhat vindicating. But I think my main takeaway was just the press. It was unlike anything we've seen this season so far. We looked quicker. And I don't really have a rational explanation for it, because Will Hughes, when he was brought on, was pulling out sprints at paces I've never seen him do before. Ismaila Sarr was absolutely electric. I think he played a big role in that for sure, actually. And I think the game I'd liken it to is Newcastle last season, where we also obviously didn't have Michael Olise, and we had Jordan Ayew starting on the right. Sarr is a much quicker player than Jordan Ayew, and he just offers that sort of turn of pace that we saw in the second half with that run against Van de Ven. And that was, interestingly enough, him sort of leaning onto the left as well, so he's a bit more versatile, just like Jordan Ayew. But it shows that we can actually do the business when we function as a team in that press. And if, you know, this is the start of us being more coherent, to use your word, Bobby, as a team in that press and in our attack, and with Lacroix marshalling our defence in a rather Anderson-like fashion, you know, this could be a huge turning point for our season.
I mean, the team looked rejuvenated. It was almost like Gasner finally worked out his best 11 and things just started to click. I was really impressed with how Palace played. And as to what you said about the press, coming back to that, I actually think it was quite easy to work out what was different. And it was the fact that the formation shifted from Tottenham's goal kicks to the actual formation that Palace sat and defended. So when Palace defended and when Palace were almost building up on the attack from back to front, it was that typical Glasner formation of the 3-4-2-1, if you like. Whereas when it was the goal kicks and when Palace wanted to initiate the press, it turned into two strikers with Eze just floating behind. So then when Vicario took the short goal kick, Sarr was able to press immediately with Mateta, and Palace were just on them straight away. Now, Tottenham's goal kicks were ludicrous from the start. Yes, all right, try it once, maybe try it twice. It didn't work. But the fact that they just carried on with Vicario passing to the centre back and then the ball ending back up with Vicario and one of Sarr and Mateta ending up on them was just mental. And it worked perfectly for Palace. And as you say, the press looked so much better. Yes, Tottenham, silly tactical intricacies. But that little change of having the two strikers and Eze just behind when starting to initiate the press just changed things dramatically for Palace because they had a quicker outlet there. They had someone who wanted to work hard. They had Mateta who just ran, and it was excellent.
Yeah, you've highlighted Mateta there, who, you know, back in the side, back in the goals, his press was really impressive, I think, alongside Sarr. Sarr brings pace, Mateta brings this kind of refusal to give up. He sort of goes right up to the goalkeeper as frequently as possible. And I think that was probably the big call going into this game, maybe even more so than Sarr starting, which was starting Mateta over Nketiah, which Glasner said in his pre-match press conference. So he gave Spurs a 2 days head start. He gave everyone a little preview as to his lineup. But my God, did it pay off. Alex, I'm wondering, how influential do you think the decision to bring in Mateta over Nketiah was in our victory?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Mateta first and foremost, because I just wanted to focus a bit more on Nketiah and how I feel he's almost been the victim of some of the tactical failures in prior games. Because whilst Mateta, don't get me wrong, had a blinder, I think he pressed effectively, he bullied centre backs, he looked like a genuine presence again. Nketiah, I think, has been the victim of this deep low block that we've been playing for a long time. I've been deeply impressed with Nketiah as a signing generally. I think he presses well. I think he's a nimble, creative player. He's a good poacher. I think, unfortunately, the blueprint for that front three clicked today. Not unfortunate for Palace, I should say, unfortunate for Eddie. I think Nketiah is someone who benefits from a high press and a high line, and we simply haven't really given him the freedom to do so today. And I salivate at the thought of what he could do poaching onto balls where we play as high as we did against Spurs. But nonetheless, let's not take away, as I said earlier, from Mateta. He pressed with aplomb. He was supported, obviously, by the rapid Ismaila Sarr and a very technically gifted Eze around him. But he nonetheless did a very, very good job in hustling. What I have to say is a very capable defence, particularly with Romero and Van de Ven, who are both quick and take no prisoners in their own right.
And I think on Mateta as well, I do think the key difference to his performance to some of the ones we've seen earlier on this season was the fact he just looked fitter. Like these few games where he's not played from the start, it's almost given him that recovery time he needed from the busy summer having the Olympics to just get himself together and get back to his best. And the performance that we saw on Sunday was very much like the Mateta we have seen at the end of last season under Glasner. Yes, he hasn't got Olise on the right feeding him them balls, but nonetheless, his energy was there. His finish, when he had the chance, he took it. It was just a much more complete performance from JP, and it was a big difference for Palace on Sunday.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is due to the amount of options that we just create by having Ismaila Sarr on the pitch. I mean, obviously last season you had Eze and Elise, who are sort of equally dangerous at times on both sides. And while Sarr may not be, you know, a Michael Elise, his pace, his skill, and the fact that he knows where the goal is just creates more space for Eze. And we saw that bring the best out of him. And when you're getting Eze on the ball in space, he can suddenly set up Mateta and he can set up you know, anyone else in the forward lines. And obviously he got an assist with a pretty remarkable piece of skills that paid off.
And if we're talking about probably the quickest centre halves in the Premier League, you would say Van der Ven, obviously Lacroix, his recovery pace is exceptional. You put Van Dijk in that kind of bracket as well, Saliba. But if you look at the way that Sarr got past Van der Ven with ease ahead of that potential red card that people are frustrated about. I mean, I think it was only yellow. He was going towards the corner flag. But he just darted past him. And that's the exact pace that Palace have been missing this season. So against any other defender in the Premier League, that's just going to be a remarkable threat for Palace to possess. And for me, he has to play every week now. He has to be in that starting 11 every week. Yes, Glasner likes his threat from the bench, but Palace had no threat from the start. So if someone's having a threat from the bench and someone plays the way they did against Tottenham, he has to start. It's a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, I mentioned it earlier. I think that's the blueprint there. I think it might genuinely just be a case that Mateta wasn't fit enough. But I think in Eze, Mateta and Sarr, you have such a wide spectrum of quality that I don't think you really got with Kamada, whereby I think the attributes between each player are completely different.
Yeah, and on that as well, it freed Munoz up on the right. He was more of a threat, which he hasn't been, because there was more to deal with on the right-hand side. He also defended better because he had more time, because he had Sarr there helping him out. And it made Eze look so much better than he had all season, because that pressure he's been holding on his shoulder of having to create for the entire team just died down a bit, because the defences had two threats to worry about. They had Sarr and his potential to create chances and glide past defenders. And they had Eze on the other side. So it just, Palace were much smoother in attack, and they had more dimensions to their threat, if you like. And obviously, when you've got a finisher like Mateta in the box, it's a scary proposition for team. So the thing is, you hope now is that Glasner's just worked that out. It's taken him a while to work that out. I can't quite understand why, because to me, it's been apparent that he had to play Sarr for a while. But finally, he's worked that out, and hopefully we can start to see the best of Palace now.
Yeah, I think there's no denying that Daniel Munoz put in his best performance of the season. You know, he also, like Mateta, looked kind of fit again. I think we've had a subpar Munoz for a couple of weeks. But, you know, some of the sprints he was putting out looked very much like how he was playing last season. Having Sarr in front of him is so different to having Kamada kind of inside of him, because it means he doesn't have that pressure on him to have to beat a man. We saw that Alex, Euro-expert guy who works for The Athletic on Twitter, talking about Munoz's inability to take players on and weakness going forward. But it really is just Munoz being a victim of the previous system, because he isn't a player that beats players. He's a player that plays sort of chip balls over a pressing fullback to a fast winger. And with Sarr in that role, all of a sudden you sort of get the best out of Munoz. And they were linking up pretty well. There were a couple of occasions where Munoz provided an overlapping run and nearly got the opportunity to either set up a player or score. I think we're all kind of waiting for that first Munoz goal as well. He hasn't really had the luck so far. You know, he's had the ball taken away from him last minute. He's had, you know, misplaced crosses. That's something that if you're going to criticize him for, you can. But it might just be a matter of the time. The more we give the ball to Munoz, he's so influential in those higher positions.
Remember that time in Palace history where we just, love nor money, couldn't sign a right back? It's been a revelation, hasn't it? Genuinely, I mean, what, £6.5 million? Brilliant, brilliant deal for someone who not only has the tenacity and the ability to drive forward. I think he's got an okay tackle on him. I'm not saying he's the best ball winner, but he's not by any means out of his depth in defence. And certainly with the cross we saw against Spurs for that goal, which we should definitely talk about, by the way. I mean, it was something that was probably the best of Munoz's crossing, wasn't it?
I mean, I was sat right behind that goal, and Mark Gay, just pointed to Munoz after the goal. It was all him. Even though Eze's little flick on was spectacular and Jean-Philippe Mateta's finish was good, there was just that acknowledgement from the captain that he's the one who deserves the credit for that, because he just did remarkably. It was excellent. Just picking up on another few things from the game as well. I thought it was a superb defensive performance. Yes, the attack was so much better, but the defending was immaculate. I think I only ever thought that Spurs were going to score if Palace made a really stupid mistake, because Palace just neutralised their threat completely, and that was impressive. And the other thing was that for 20 minutes of the game, Jefferson Lerma was the best player on the pitch by far. He was just controlling midfield. And when he went off, he was like, oh, is this going to be where Palace crumble now and Spurs could try kind of get on top? But Will Hughes just filled that void immaculately. I mean, he slotted in seamlessly. There were so many good individual performances there yesterday. And it just made for a remarkable team performance.
Yeah, I think we really struggled to have consistency in our midfield this season. But for whatever reason, all three players we asked to either start or play a significant amount of minutes in midfield were genuinely brilliant. Hughes looked like how he was last season. He kind of looked quick, like I was saying earlier. Lerma's role in the press was immense. It was devastating to see him get injured. But of course, we've got Cheick Doucouré coming back for this weekend. And Adam Wharton, I think, also put in possibly his best performance of the season as well, because he's been really struggling, we know, with that sort of hernia issue that's been affecting his groin. But, you know, if that's the last we see of him before he goes in for his surgery, he's done himself proud, and it's sort of a hint of what to look forward to when he's back to his best, which is a very exciting prospect for Palace, because we could end up having a full-strength Palace side finally with the players we have for the first time this season.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Morton. I would actually go as far to say he looked fit, but he was hurt, if that makes sense. Like, fitness-wise, he looked fine. His passing was so much better, but every time he did put a pass or a tackle in, you see him feel his groin when the play next stops, like touch his groin or try and stretch it out or stuff. So, yes, he's clearly injured. Yes, he's clearly in a lot of pain. Yes, the painkillers aren't taking the edge off completely in games, but it was just a much more complete performance from him yesterday, and you were pleased to see it. Now, I do think we may be seeing once more against Wolves, and then hopefully Doucouré will be back, and then he can go and have the surgery, because my word, he needs it. Because if you can just unlock that next level of Adam Wharton and have him playing at full fitness, I mean, Palace in midfield just look a great threat, whether that's Wharton and Lerma, whether that's Wharton and Hughes, whether that's Doucouré and Wharton. Where whatever it is, it's a strong midfield, and with the defence that Palace have behind them, it starts to get exciting again a bit. And I'm not saying by no means things have changed at Palace, because yes, there's still reason to be negative, yes, there's still fear, yes, you're still looking over your shoulder, but hopefully this is just the start of the Palace's start of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you mentioned the tantalising prospect of our midfield getting back together. Just for context about his overall passing, in terms of progressive passes per 90 among all Premier League midfielders, Adam Wharton is second with 8.8 per 90, eclipsed only ironically by James Maddison at 9.1, so not a lot of them, who coincidentally couldn't stop whinging around yesterday. Right, that dig aside though, that's the highest among all under-20 players across Europe. So this is by the way, a Wharton that is far from his best, that has, you know, dragged a bit this season, looked kind of a shell of himself up until maybe the Spurs game. So I think the prospect of him being at full fitness for an extended period is one that we should be incredibly excited by. I mean, that stat won't surprise anyone. That ranking in relation to his peers won't surprise anyone. If anything, I think it's surprising that he even managed to muster such a performance at all, but aren't we glad he did? I mean, it was him back to his best in many ways, and something that I think has been so, so decisive in basically Palace's dismal run up to this point. I mean, people talk about Eliza, and we won't go over it again because it's such a wash talking point, let's be honest. But, you know, our creativity and our lack of it in those opening, what, 8 or 9 games is so much more than just Eliza, albeit a big part. There's so much more to it. And I think Wharton getting back to his best is ultimately something that is not just good for Palace fans and for the team, but actually, I'm talking more generally here. You know, we know that he's a rising star with England. I think he's someone that needs to be managed carefully in terms of injury or minutes, because what a prospect we have. What a prospect.
Well, we've been working backwards positionally from attack to midfield, and now it's time to talk about defence, because I'd argue some of the best performances we saw on Sunday were those of our centre-backs. Trevor Chalobah made Team of the Week and has been generally solid since coming in, probably his best performance for Palace so far. Mark Gay was pretty much fantastic and impeccable. gave another one of his probably best performances of the season so far. But for all of the virtues in their performance, I'd say both were overshadowed by the absolutely dominant performance that Maxence Lacroix gave. I mean, it was a masterclass in defending. I haven't seen a centre-back at Selhurst Park play like that at all in modern memory. And we've had some fantastic centre-backs in that time. I mean, he was rapid, as you'd expect. He was strong. He didn't get beaten in the air. But the thing that stood out to me most was his confidence. He was so willing to go one-on-one with some of the best attackers in the league, and Dominic Solanke and Brennan Johnson, and he had them beaten for pace and had them beaten for physicality on every occasion.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Bruno. I thought he was best player on the pitch by a long way, actually. I noted down one word to his performance, which was warrior. Whether that's the way he was acting towards the crowd. I mean, the ball went out for a goal kick with about 5 minutes to play. No, not even that, about 2 minutes to play. And he started flexing his muscles and give like a massive facial expression of just pure joy. And he was just, as I say, warrior from minute one. His passing was better than I've ever seen at Selhurst, better than Anderson. I mean, it was just a fuck you to Roy Keane, that performance, really, because saying that he missed Joachim Anderson was just pure nonsense when you've got Maxence Lacroix at the back. I mean, I think he's shown glimpses all season, really, or since he joined the club. He's just a strong defender. His tackling was so much better as well. Sometimes I think he's been a little bit tentative to go into a challenge at time, but he just oozed confidence, oozed class. And it was just a remarkable performance. I mean, defensive actions were high, recoveries were high, interceptions were high, clearances were high. He won over 50% of his duels. It was just a classy, classy performance. I just think he's proved to be an outstanding signing, really. He's ultra physical. He obviously knows Glasner well, and I just think he slotted in brilliantly. And for a £15 million price tag for a 24-year-old who's already played at the highest level, European football, obviously played in the Bundesliga, which is a really good quality of football. I really like the business. I think he's proven to be a shrewd addition so far, and he will either go on to be an excellent Palace player for the rest of his career or stand to make the club a very big amount of profit, which is obviously what the model is all about. So I just think he's settled in remarkably, and that Tottenham performance really, really topped it off. And I look forward to seeing him play there for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. I mean, I caught the vibe several games ago. I think the rest of the Palace fan base has now as well. If you haven't seen his silly TikTok about three collabs with someone, you should, by the way. You're missing out. You will not be able to look at him the same way again. But that aside, I thought he was phenomenal. I think I mentioned at the start, I think that's in part due to the way we tweaked the positions of the centre-backs. But looking at Lacroix in more detail, I think there was less onus on him to be dragged out of position out wide to supplement either attacking movements or to pay back wingers. And I think Gay and Chalobah did both of those jobs excellently, whereas I think he had the onus to both drive the ball forward and provide an extra man when progressing play out from the back, but then also to do what he does best, which is tracking back and making last-minute tackles as well. So I think that central position is one of immense responsibility that the data and the eye test show he wore on his shoulders with serious aplomb. I didn't even realise Dominic Solanke was playing half the game because he kept him that quiet. I think there... I mean, you look at Spurs' threat, it overwhelmingly came from the wings, and even then it was fairly muted at times, which is all credit to the entire back three. But such a big part of that, I think, is Lacroix being able to keep the striker completely quiet. He had an immense game. He was absolutely over the moon at full time. He was engaging with the fans, G-ing them up, going over to them. We have a real gem. I think I've seen a lot of these traits across the season, and it just surprises me that many people were still lacking in really seeing those abilities. I mean, for me, I'm just sick of hearing Anderson's name. No disrespect to him. Like, I love the man, but can we please just sodding move on from him as a fan base? You know, we've got our replacement. Anderson's gone. We've got good money for him. I wish him all the best. He's always welcome. But for me, you know, we've done the business we've done. I think Lacroix is an excellent and all-rounded replacement for him. And, you know, long may such his form continue, because he was excellent against Spurs and without a doubt my man of the match.
This is quite a memeable word, but I just think his entire performance had an aura to it. I just thought there was so much confidence, swag. It was just it was good to see. I just liked how he carried himself. I liked how physical he was. I liked his great defending. I liked his balls out from the back. It just had everything about it. I've used this word 3 times now, I think, in today's pod, but it was just complete. And that's exactly what you want to see from a central centre half. I think it's what Palace have missed this season. Yes, Mark Gay is an outstanding defender, but I don't think he's got that presence, and it might be the height thing of being a central defender, whereas Lacroix just had that all. And I think Mark's much more suited to the left, Trevor's much more suited to the right, and Maxence is much more suited to the central role. And I think this is something Bruno and I did very early on when we signed Lacroix. We were having this discussion of whether he should be the central defender, or whether that should be Mark, or whether that should be someone else. And I now just think Palace have found that right formula at the back of Mark on the left, Maxence in the middle, and Trevor on the right.
Totally. I think that not only that back three is settled now, I think the front three is as well. And I think a combination of both of them just gelled at the perfect time to unleash what I thought was probably the most complete performance we've seen. Not even, and this is going to be a bit of a stretch, admittedly, but not even this season, but the season before as well. That would be right up there with the likes of, you know, Wolves away against United, United at home, Villa at home. You know, these were complete performances where we dominated start to finish, and that proudly stands among them for me, definitely.
I just think it's going to do a lot for the confidence. I think we've finally now seen a side that is capable of getting results in the post-Elise era, which has been a big worry, because we haven't really created the chances. There's been a struggle, but I just think the whole team, it was much more coherent, and almost there's a bit more optimism back into the season now. Palace fans are a bit happier. We almost feel like we're back in that honeymoon period that we were when Glasner first had that remarkable run of results, because quite frankly, I thought it had crashed and burned, and I didn't think Glasner was going to make it to the international break. But it's a bit more comfortable now. It's a bit more, like I said a moment ago, optimism. And a real, can they get this season going now? It's a huge week ahead in the Midlands. Villa in the cup and Wolves in the league. I mean, Wolves is still a huge 6-pointer, and if you lose that, things are back down again. But it just, there's an opportunity now to get yourself into a cup quarter final and start to look up the table. And fingers crossed, things will start to turn around a bit.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I do share your optimism. I think Wolves is a tremendous opportunity to kick on. We always seem to struggle against Marco Silva's Fulham, so that's one I'll park a bit. But definitely looking at the cup and then at Wolves, I think there's a huge opportunity here to bring some new life back into the Palace fan base and to really breed on that confidence that we've already gelled here against Spurs. And I'm really optimistic. Genuinely, it's going to be a huge week, but I just want to caveat it by saying that we are only 17 still. We are a matter of points away from that zone. We are still in the thick of it. I always thought relegation was more a distance factor than a reality. You know, I've never really bought into the idea that 9 games in, you know, you're in a relegation battle, because things can change. But I have to say the warning signs were there. I don't refute that. And yeah, just really, really encouraged to see where we go from here.
Yeah. And I just think it will do very good things for the confidence of the squad. And if they can turn Villa over tomorrow, when you're listening to this, it will just, the squad will look in a much better place. The mentality would have shifted. Yes, the Spurs thing will do good stuff, but they've got to follow that up at Villa, and they've got to go to Wolves and get a result. Looking forward to the season again now. I was very down with it. I do think Palace were in a relegation battle. I still do. Couple of results, things change. You're looking at the table. You're only within 3 points of Man United and whatnot, and then you're looking to get above them. I still think Palace are, what, is it 7-8 points away from Forest, who are seventh? So it's not out of the realms of possibility of Palace kicking on again. As I say, the Spurs result does big things for the squad. Hopefully they can go to Villa on Wednesday and win and get through to a last eight of the Carabao Cup, and we'll see where things go from there.
Yeah, with the optimism back in around South London, obviously we've got this huge game against Villa on Wednesday in the Cup. I'm curious, Bobby, what would your sort of ideal lineup be given the state of fitness and the underlying desire to see a couple of youth names whilst balancing the desire for a result?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see Matt Turner in goal. Let me start with that. I'd much rather stick with Dean Henderson. All right, yes, Matt's the backup. But Palace have got a chance at Villa, and I think they should go strong. I think Villa will bring in a few changes. Whether that means John Duran starts, that is a scary proposition. But the way Palace defence handled Tottenham on Sunday, then they can handle him. So, yeah, stick with a back three and Henderson. I'd maybe like to see Caleb given a go at fullback. It would be nice to see one of the youngsters have a run out, whether that's a right wing back or left wing back, I don't mind. I'd quite like to see Ty given a rest personally. He plays a lot of football, and you do start to notice that. So I would like to see him given a rest. I think the midfield's obviously going to depend on injuries. I think Hughes will definitely start in there. Who his partner is, not quite sure. I think Saar, as long as, yes, he went off against Tottenham, but as long as that's not too serious, I would like to see him start again. I think it lends itself to Nketiah playing and Eze, so I think you should go relatively strong. Maybe there's a case for Asher to play as well, instead of, I don't really know who you play him instead of, because I want to see both Saar and Eze play, but if Saar's not fit enough to start, then Asher starts and you stick with a back five completely. But I'd like to see one of Caleb or Asher start personally.
Or even Franco Ume, right, as a possible player.
Yeah, I would either play Caleb on the right, Franco at left wing back, or Asher instead of Saar. I wouldn't play all three. I wouldn't play two of them. I would just play one of them. And then you keep your core of the squad exactly the same, because Villa will bring in a few changes. Yes, they're still going to be very strong, but it's a real chance for Palace to go up there, go, fuck this. We don't care about Villa. We don't care about the stature of your club. We have no respect. Go for it and get through to the last eight of the Carabao Cup. And then draw goes in your favour. You avoid City. You avoid one of the big boys. And all of a sudden, you could be looking at a two-legged semi-final. So they've just got to go for it. That's my thing. As long as Palace go for it, even if they get beat by going for it, go for it.
See, for me, I'm always controversially, I'm one of those people that doesn't really care about the Carabao Cup. But as you say, I think we're touching distance from the last eight. I think we're at the stage now where we should be looking up a bit and seeing ourselves as a genuine contender, albeit more of an outsider one. So, you know, even I can't sit on the back here and just say, yeah, let's just throw the cup. It's a Mickey Mouse trophy anyway. We focus on the league, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, I think we have to go strong because we haven't got the bodies not to, not without playing youth. And in Glasner's defence, I think he's shown a willingness to do so this season. So I think my main ask is really two things. One, we rotate the fullbacks because I think both Caleb and Ume are good prospects. And I think they deserve a chance to see what they can do, even if it falls apart. You know, that's the risk we take. And secondly, I want to see weirdly Nathaniel Clyne back, because people forget he was the bastion in the heart of defence that was that gayless era for Palace under Glasner, where we just won all those games and looked like nothing would get past us. So he's a very capable option, albeit I think more a rotational one now. He's a very capable option, and it'd be good to see some of the defence rested, because we're going to need that back three to be a really like consistent unit if we want to push on now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Clyne come in for Trevor on that right-hand side. I also wouldn't be surprised if, due to the fashion in which Saar was withdrawn from the game on Sunday, we see Asher Agbenoni be that player that comes in from our sort of youth academy. He's obviously already had professional minutes against Nottingham Forest, and it's probably the most likely candidate even without that injury if he were to feature from the bench. I think for all of Glasner's publicity about Franco Ume, I think he might be unlikely to play solely due to the fact he's still being sort of converted into this wing back, and the idea of, you know, some of the players that Villa have at their disposal running up against a defender in Franco Ume, who isn't really a defender, or Caleb Kapora, who is possibly 5'5", maybe 5'4". I think that wouldn't be the best of ideas in a cup tie away from home. So if it's anyone, I'd like to see it be Asher Agbenone. But on that note, I think we'll wrap up there. Thank you for listening, everyone. It's obviously been a shorter episode, but we'll do a double header on the Midlands, Wolves and Villa next week. If you like what you're hearing, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a rating and review on wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple. I don't really know the other ones, but we do put a lot of effort into Amazon Music as well, although I think only 5% of people listen on there. Whether it's one star or five, all feedback's really appreciated, helps us improve and helps other Palace fans to find content that they'll love. If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't checked out our website yet, please do. Thepalaceway.com. We've got news, opinion and analysis articles, and even our own Wordle inspired game called Wardle, after the ever impervious Joel Ward. He hasn't sued us yet, so I'm still using it. You can find us on Twitter, not X as this outro tends to say, and Instagram. We're at the Palace Way on both after much hard work on trying to secure those usernames, and also on TikTok at the Palace Way Pod. Thank you very much to former host Alex Jones coming back on the podcast. Thank you, and hopefully we'll see you soon. Any last words?
Yeah, can we get Maxence Lacroix on our TikTok? I'd love for that to happen. It's got to happen at some point. I'm begging. I'm on my knees. Jokes aside, really good to be back. It's nice to be talking about our win, albeit briefly. I think, Bobby, you particularly have given me this air of optimism that I shouldn't have going into these two games. I'm actually going to Wolves away, my first game in person of the season. So I will very much be there at Molineux. If we lose, blame me. But yeah, again, really good chatting to you guys. Really, really glad to see that we finally got a win under our belt. And long story short, I hope it continues as we all do.
Well, thank you again for coming on, Alex. It's a pleasure. And Bobby, of course, thanks for coming on yet again. Any final words?
Yeah, I'll start charging if I have to come on next week.
Hopefully after a couple of wins, which would make it much more tolerable.
Yeah, no, really, really enjoyed it again. All I ask you really is people just drop me a follow on Twitter if you can. It's Bobby Manzi, as it sounds. Check out the articles we're putting out on the News Shopper. Sometimes you might disagree with my opinions, but I like to think we're giving some decent content out over there. And to echo Alex's sentiment, I'll be at both games in the Midlands this week. Wolves away on Saturday, and of course, Villa in the Cup on Wednesday. 11:11 train back from Villa on Wednesday night. So let's hope that's a lucky sign with some angel numbers, as some people like to call them. And let's hope it's not cancelled, especially if Palace lose on pens.
Oof! Can you imagine? Can you imagine you putting? This Palace is why I'm not going.
Palace lose on pens, train home cancelled, stranded at Birmingham. Oh, I just couldn't think of anything worse.
I see we've reverted back to our trademark negativity on this podcast.
Yeah, that really would be the Palace way.
Indeed.
Out on pen, no train home, stuck in Birmingham.
And on that glorious note, that's all from us today. And we'll see you all next week after hopefully two promising results.